Penguin Random House Audio presents Nights When Nothing Happened by Simon Hahn. Read for you by James Chen. For Chan He. But a stranger in a strange land, he is no one. Men know him not, and to know not is to care not for. Bram Stoker, Dracula. Before it all gets wiped away, let me say, there is wisdom in the slender hour which arrives between two shadows. Lee Young Lee, Epistle. 1. Jack Chung knew about protection. He knew who gave it and who needed it. And he knew that he was the one who'd found his sister curled around the toilet one night, sleepwalking into the swinging kitchen door another night. And that was a calling. Most nights had limped along since his parents began putting Annabelle to sleep in her own room instead of theirs. When sleep finally came to them, they would snore the way kings and queens with servants to adjust their pillows all night long snore, dreaming dreams that were not anyone's right to interrupt. At an hour when the house held its breath and waited for something to happen, Jack stayed up and read books in which characters died, literally, of fright. The sound of a leaf scraping across the sidewalk could draw him downstairs in socks until he reached hardwood. Then, realizing that his sister was still safe upstairs, he would stand in the dark before his mother's favorite sheepskin rug and imagine that the rattling and scratching he was hearing behind the walls came from beavers, though he had never seen a beaver and confused them with raccoons. Late one night in November, a steady pounding woke him up. He lay under the covers for some time, remembering that his mother had not been home when he went to bed, and wondering if she had come back from work or he had dreamed it. Downstairs, he found the front door open to the street. Had the calling moved beyond toilets and kitchens? He wandered outside without slapping on shoes, his mind still muddled with dream sounds. On the sidewalk, he skirted a pile of dog shit and an issue of the Dallas Morning News, still wrapped in yellow film. The houses on both sides of Plimpton Court stood like tombs, each split down the middle by a cobbled pathway, one fledgling oak or elm on either side. In front of two houses, Christmas lights already spiraled up the thin trunks and framed the eaves, the work of professionals. From a balcony, an inflatable Santa raised a mitten in his direction and did not lower it. Jack had made a habit during the day of crouching by the window in the piano room and waving hello back, which always sent Annabelle into fits of giggles. It had not occurred to him until now that the Santa could be waving goodbye. He kept on, avoiding its eyes. He found the first of Annabelle's glow-in-the-dark slippers on the Brenner's front lawn. Crouching down, he brushed grass clippings from the plush cotton. He pressed a hand on a sunken patch of grass. He pressed here, he pressed there. A strange thought came to him. Maybe the heartbeat he was feeling did not belong to him, but to the grass, and to the earthworms slithering beneath. If he followed the trail of heartbeats between the Brenners and the Driscolls, he would find the other slipper. He rushed forward, staying low and close to a brown fence at the corner of Plimpton and Main that still gave off paint fumes. There was no time to pull up his socks. The cracks between the planks glowed a phosphorescent blue, a swimming pool. There was something about a lighted swimming pool at midnight that reminded Jack of murder and intrigue. A car passed on Main Street, its headlights flashing through the fence and illuminating the leaves floating in the pool. His sister could be drifting toward this vacant stretch of road where high schoolers tore through in trucks with wheels bigger than her, blazing a shortcut out to Sheridan. He followed the path he imagined her taking, between houses and down alleyways, until he reached the sewage creek that cut through the community. During the summer, he remembered, the feet and underside of a duck had bobbed there for days. On the grass that sloped up from the creek, he spotted the glow of the other slipper. His sister stood a few yards away, on the bridge that overlooked the creek. Under a towering steel streetlight, she swayed slightly. Her head was lifted, and a white glow bloomed from her neck up to the stretch of baby fat under her chin. Her eyes were closed, as if she were basking in the pool of light. If Jack did not know better, he would have thought a spaceship had beamed her down to Earth. He sidled beside her, a slipper in each hand. He was Annabelle's protector, but sometimes he did not know what to do with his hands. "Hear me in there? Knock, knock?" Annabelle blinked. "You found me, Daddy." A few dead crickets still clung to the lamp. The stink of the summer's crickets had carried through the end of fall, and perhaps would last through a winter that never arrived. It was no wonder he'd thought American air to be unsafe. In those early years in Plano, Jack had held his breath around diapers and hospitals and graveyards and urinals and police stations and fertilizer and roadkill and cameras and his father. "Daddy," his sister said. "Okay," he said. "Daddy, Daddy, Daddy, Dad." "I heard you." Now, that call again. That, "Breathe, Jack." That, "Take your sister away, Jack." Away from the light, away from the image of dead crickets falling as faintly as the first snow in China into her little mouth. It was a new day, and they needed to go back, to the sprinkler-fed grass, the potted mums, the vanilla-scented pine cones that would remind him in any season of this place he'd lived in Texas. "Take her back, Jack. Take her back." This fall of 2003, Jack was 11 and his sister 5, the span between them never changing, though he felt that it should. 6 years contained an entire life. They equaled, he reminded himself, the number of years that he'd lived in China. The more years Jack had accumulated in Plano, the more he'd shed of that first life. And in the days before Annabelle began sleepwalking, what he recalled most clearly was his own daydreaming, perched by the fourth-story window of his grandparents' apartment in Tianjin. His earliest memories were of looking down at older buildings, while his later ones were of looking up, craning his neck toward condos and offices that sprouted in a matter of months, crammed in staggered formation so that where one building ended in the skyline, the next began. They bled into his view of the muddy high river, the uniformed street sweepers, the market from which every few days his grandparents wheeled groceries home. There went the older buildings, the greenhouses growing like hair on their roofs. There went green itself. The older and stronger Jack became, the more he saw the wobbly legs that held up his city. Beyond the high-rises were the cobblestone streets flanked by forts and villa-style houses, complete with red-tile roofs that Italian invaders had erected. The giant cross on a French cathedral bore down on pedestrians, slinging sun into their eyes. A Japanese house with manicured gardens had once been home to the last emperor of China, a traitor who'd sold out his country to the enemy. There were German barracks, British hotels, Austro-Hungarian mansions. Jack could not point on his grandparents' globe to where any of these invaders were from, but he could picture their faces, grinning demonically in the water swirling in Lao Lao's mop pail, or in the faded brown rings at the bottom of Lao Ye's teacup. With a swing of his sword, he knocked back bowls of their congealing soy milk, stabbed the heart of the electric fan that made the summers bearable. Lao Lao and Lao Ye saved their heads by ducking. They cursed the day they'd bought him the cheap plaything. What did it matter that Jack was defending them? They care.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?